A duet with Golden Youth, another Vancouver band, and Trust, and that song is called Ladybird. Up next we have the lovely Morgan talking with the Armenian Students Association, so that should be good. So stay tuned in, and thanks for listening.
You tell me all the time that you're the one that knows. Well, come on inside and show me how it goes. Knowing that your heart's hidden away from me, it's the one I want, the one you know I
your 75-cent coffee fix in the sub.
It's your source for reasonably priced, creatively named stew and vegan brownies.
It's your purveyor of bicycle-delivered local produce.
It's also a place where volunteers can realize their vision of responsible business and where like-minded students can explore UBC's food systems.
Hark! Sprouts is currently accepting applications for next year's executive board and is encouraging ambitious, creative, and disciplined students from all faculties and year levels to apply.
Come by Sprouts in the sub-basement to learn more about our projects and how to get involved.
I tried to kick the ball, but my tinny flew right off. I'm red as a beet, 'cause I'm so embarrassed.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM's 24 Hours of Student Power. This is Morgan Yee, and to start off this hour, we have Josh Gabbert Doyen and Christine Hecker.
Shannon.
Oh, Shannon Hecker, my bad. And Josh is going to conduct an interview with Shannon. So here we go.
Hi there. I'm Josh Gabbert-Doyen. I'm fortunate enough to be a member of the UBC Social Justice Center, a resource group on the second floor of the sub. The SGC is a student-run organization that's gone through a revamp this year. So far, activism within the group is focused on the Canadian International Institute for Extractive Industries and Development and some issues related to tuition fees. Recently, the SJC got involved with activism related to the LC-PUCTUC blockade. Last week, a march was organized in solidarity with the LC-PUCTUC activists. I'll be talking with Shannon Hecker, member of the SJC and organizer of last week's march. First, a little bit of background about LC-PUCTUC and what's happening in New Brunswick. So LC-PUCTUC is a Mi'kmaq First Nations community located north of Moncton, New Brunswick. The community has seen significant amount of persecution since starting a blockade some months ago. SWN Resource Canada, a subsidiary of U.S.-based Southwestern Energy Company, is an oil and natural gas company working in New Brunswick. The company is exploring for natural gas on unceded Mi'kmaq territory. Natural gas would eventually be removed through hydraulic fracking, inevitably at the risk of the LC-PUCTUC and surrounding environment. Community members from the LC-PUCTUC community organized a blockade in New Brunswick on Highway 11 to prevent SWN from continuing their exploration. The blockade has been going on for several months now. What's perhaps most alarming about the story is the RCMP reaction to these protests. On October 17th, the RCMP carried out a raid against an LC-PUCTUC anti-fracking camp, where dozens of demonstrators were arrested and six RCMP vehicles were lit on fire. The blockade has continued since then with numerous arrests. Heavily armed RCMP tactical units have been commonplace on the highway, and SWN operations have been significantly slowed down thanks to the demonstration. I'm here with Shannon Hecker to talk about a solidarity march that took place on Friday at UBC. So, to start off, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Can you situate the LC-PUCTUC situation for a little bit? Kind of what's been going down for listeners.
I can. First off, what I'd like to say is they're not protesters or activists. They're protectors of the land, land defenders. Mi'kmaq territory is unceded territory. That means that it was never, they never signed a treaty or gave up their rights or title to the land. So what you see that's going on in New Brunswick right now is not a protest against development. It's that they're saying, no, you cannot develop on our land. And there are some laws that provide for the government in order to do development on First Nations land. However, they are the people whose territory that it is are entitled to certain processes of consultation, which hasn't been met. And so that's why you have the standoff now and has been going on. Right. Closer. Okay, I'm sorry.
How do you see LC-PUCTUC in relation to the what's known as the I Don't Know More movement?
Well, they're two different things, but they are related. The situation in LC-PUCTUC is, as I said, they want to protect their land. They're saying no to shale gas resource extraction or the exploration in order to do so. And the I Don't Know More movement, they're related in the sense that, the I Don't Know More is more of a movement. It's not just one issue. It's a way to get the people together. And when I say the people, I don't mean just Indigenous people. I mean all the people, because we're all humans. The injustices that Indigenous people face on a daily basis and have been facing since the occupation of Canada are not just Indigenous issues. They're human issues. Human rights are being violated on many, many ways, and the issue that's going on in LC-PUCTUC right now is an issue of not just Indigenous land, but the environment. Fracking, I can't explain the exact process that well, but if you look it up, they use a lot of really bad chemicals and hydraulic pressure in order to extract this gas out of the bedrock, I guess it is, and it greatly pollutes the surrounding area. So it's not just the LC Pektek people that this will affect. It's going to affect all the surrounding communities that live in that area and the whole, food chain. And it's all connected. And this isn't just in LC Pektek. This is going on worldwide. And there's people that are defending their land worldwide. And if we don't stand up together as a people, united as humans who want to live on this earth together, then they're going to keep fracking. They're going to go wherever they can, and they're going to just keep on doing it. So that's why right now, it seems really far away because it's on literally the opposite end of this country, but it's going to set a precedent. If they push SWN out and they are not able to go ahead with this project, then that's going to send a message out to all the other extractive companies that want to come in here, and not just here, but go anywhere and do this sort of, resource extraction. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
And when did you start organizing for the UBC March on Friday?
I actually started last Monday afternoon, because every Monday we have a meeting at 12 in the Social Justice Center. And I'm always there, and I'm always listening and really keen to get active, but I'm so busy. But this is something I really felt that was important. And a lot of people were concerned that it wouldn't be successful with only a few days planning, but I was determined to do so anyhow. I did have a lot of people help me here and there, and it happened. It was a success. Based on that success, I went home, and I was looking at all my pictures and Facebook, and I was really happy. And then I saw there was a call out for solidarity, for blockades, a call for action today, December 2nd. And so at about midnight Friday, I decided that we were going to have another march. And this time it would be downtown, you said.
And that's over at Main and...
Main and Hastings. We'll be there at 5 o'clock. And we're going to gather there, and we're going to block off Main and Hastings. Mm-hmm. And then we'll march.
What kind of experience do you have with organizing and with activism?
Well, Friday was my first march that I've ever organized. I spent a lot of time. I've learned a lot. I've got a lot of mentors. I have a lot of mentors. A lot of really strong women that I've met from both the Splatchine territory, which is up in the North Okanagan, and also women from Musqueam territory. And there's some men, too, that have mentored me, my time spent at Cessnam, if you're unfamiliar with that, that's the village and burial site, the Musqueam village and burial site underneath the Arthur Lang Bridge. There was a vigil there for about 2 years, and I spent 2 years there standing vigil in order to prevent the further desecration of the people who had been buried there, because they were trying to build condos there. So this was going on from the beginning of January 2012. And they just got the land back this September. So anyways, I wrote a blog about that, and I was a supporter, a really strong supporter. And I just then I ended up getting involved with the Idle No More movement and going to different rallies, supporting different causes and just supporting the sense of solidarity and being one. And we are one tribe, we're all part of the human tribe.
And you were saying that you spoke last year at UBC.
I did. So I was just going to get to that. I started off at Cessnam, and then I started going to rallies and made a drum and started singing and drumming. And some people noticed me and that I was out there. And there was a woman from UBC approached me and asked me if I would be interested in speaking from a settler's perspective on Idle No More. So I did. And, it was great. And it's... I don't know what else to say on that one. I spoke about, spoke really briefly. I spoke about three things. I spoke about systemic racism in Canada. I spoke about, I spoke about the reason why we all need to get together in solidarity, and why it's important for Canadians to... Why Indigenous issues regarding their territory and the land is relevant to the rest of Canadians.
How do you feel about the RCMP reaction?
I think it's
especially
makes me really sad. I'm kind of glad you really asked me this question, because I've you know, we had the protest against the way the RCMP was deployed on Friday. And I said thank you to them. And that kind of caused a bit of a stir, actually.
That was on Friday at the...
Yeah,
at the
I said it on Friday. And I also made it on a comment, on a picture mm-hmm. on Facebook. And there was a lot of people that were like, why would you say thank you to them? And I guess it was because, I mean, I don't like the way that they were being deployed, but the people there were being cooperative with
us. You're saying at UBC?
At UBC. I said thank you to the RCMP for escorting us mm-hmm. Because they were being really cooperative. Because I think that, you know, I really think it's really sad what's going out there. Mm-hmm. And I understand that, you know, people there, they're just doing their job, so to speak. But mm-hmm. I think that, you know, if you really feel wrongly about something, that you don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really want to get on the whole idea of the topic of RCMP.
But the UBC, the campus security.
The campus security, and they're cooperative. Mm-hmm. They blocked us off. And, yeah, I don't know. It mainly makes me sad, though, that the way the RCMP are being deployed mm-hmm. in LC Puck Talk. I also get really sad about the way they don't do certain things here, like in regards to the missing and murdered women. And mm-hmm. so I don't really want to talk about that too much.
Yeah, no.
But, yeah.
And how do you feel... How do you feel about the way the media has been covering LC Puck Duck and the way information has been circulating?
Well, I don't really think the media has been covering it all that much. Like, I think it's the smaller, like, Vancouver co-op media was, mm-hmm. like, the only outside news media source other than UBC that mm-hmm. covered Friday's march. Now, I understand it was really short notice and it wasn't that big, mm-hmm. but, I mean, I'm kind of surprised that there wasn't any other talk
about it. And the Vancouver Media Co-op's been active in New Brunswick as well. They had a journalist.
They have a reporter. I met her, mm-hmm. his sister, and he's, I forget his name, Miles something. He's been getting mm-hmm. arrested, like, a few times just for being there, bearing witness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even safe to report this to the rest of the world. They don't want them to know that they're turning New Brunswick into a police state.
And there's been, like, a significant... I mean, down in New Brunswick, there's been a significant kind of blog culture or such that's been going down. And have you been writing about it? Or?
I wrote an article for The Knoll,
mm-hmm.
which has yet to be published, and I probably should revise it because mm-hmm. things keep happening so yeah. fast. But I wrote a blog. It started off about the Solidarity March that was on October 18th. Which was the day after October 17th when 200 RCMP came in full fatigue wear. There were snipers there. Children and elders were pepper sprayed and shot at with rubber bullets. Like, it's just shocking that the way that they handled the situation.
Mm-hmm. And so can you talk a little bit about the Knoll? I know you had some...
An article. We're bringing it back. The Knoll hasn't mm-hmm. been published for a while. I'm not sure how long it's been, but this will be the first issue.
Mm-hmm.
That's due to come out, like, sometime this month, probably be in circulation in January.
And that's organized by the SJC,
oh,
for people who didn't know.
Yeah.
Knoll, so
right.
Hope to see that soon. Well, Shannon, thank you very much
You're welcome. Talking
with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
For sure. So that's a little bit of...
I have one more announcement.
Yeah. We had something to read, eh?
Yeah. Well, actually, I have two more announcements then.
Okay.
Because, I have a message from someone who's on the front lines. Elsie Puck-Duck right now. I'm just going to look it up. And in the meantime, I just wanted to tell you that on December 22nd, we will be... I'm not hosting it, but there will be an Idle No More one-year anniversary celebration at Metro Town Center. That's December 22nd. Google it. Idle No More, December 22nd. Be there. It's going to be in Metro Town. We're going to take over the mall. So right now I'm just getting my message here from Ambrose Williams. And she's from Vancouver. And she went out to New Brunswick to support... LC Puck Duck and everyone else out there on the front lines. I should have this ready. I'm sorry. She sent it to me. Right. Here we go. Thank you for standing in solidarity with our Mi'kmaq brothers and sisters. Many of you have sent us off on our journey. This was the caravan from Vancouver to New Brunswick. We traveled across Canada to witness what has been happening here in LC-PocTuck territory. Kent County has become a police state with SWN's recent injunction. People have been pulled from their cars. Planes have been circling overhead. We have had many clashes with the police. The RCMP's screams of "Move, move, 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 move" haunts people's thoughts when they close their eyes. We remain strong and stand side by side, those here in LC-PocTuck. Your prayers and thoughts give us strength and remind us that we are not alone. I've witnessed non-Indigenous people come out in convoys to support us when things get intense. People from across all nations are standing side by side, us in the struggle against resource development. I will continue to stand side by side my LC-PocTuck brothers and sisters until I am no longer needed. No amount of rain, snow, or cold will deter my journey to protect Mother Earth. Canada is being awoken. Keep on fighting. They call us radicals and terrorists for speaking out against the government. Respectfully, Ambrose Williams.
I'll leave you guys with that. I'm with Shannon Hecker here at CITR, talking about the Social Justice Center. Thank you very much, Shannon.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And thank you very much to Josh and Shannon for that. Up next, we have a piece from News 101, our Friday show, Christine's Hot Topic, which we did not get to play in full. We'll be playing the next, so here we go. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM's 24 Hours of Student Power Programming. Christine is a first year at UBC, and she joined the news team in September, and it's been great having her. I hope you enjoy this.
Welcome to the last hot topic of the year, everyone. As December draws near and everyone gets hyped for the holidays, one can't help but wonder, what is the true spirit of Christmas?
My name's Jenna, I'm in first year and I'm in arts.
Okay, do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
Personally, I think yes. The perfect depiction of this is in Mariah Carey's / Justin Bieber's take on All I Want for Christmas Is You. And they're just shopping and buying so many toys and pieces of technology. And I just think it's absolutely vile. I think that that's completely taken away from what Christmas spirit should really be about. Creating all this kind of consumerist views in the media and through music and just through everyone in society is taking away from why we should be really celebrating it.
Do you think charity organizations are taking away from that spirit?
I think that charity organizations, obviously Christmas is all about giving, and charity is about giving to the less fortunate or animals or anything like that. Nevertheless, I kind of feel that charities, some of the bigger charities, are perhaps also jumping on the consumerist bandwagon. A lot of what we see through charities is done through advertisements. Charities do use spokespeople, celebrities, who are very like prominent figures in the consumerist world. So in that respect, I think it's a bit contradictory.
I'm Sally. I'm a third year science student.
All right. So do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
No, I don't. Well, personally, I believe in Christmas, like the Christian aspect of it, so...
Do you think gifts play a really big part in that as well?
They probably did when I was a little younger, but now I like to think I place a little less emphasis on materialism.
I'm Manu Bajwa, so I'm studying science and second year.
Do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
I don't know, like, kind of, in some ways, yeah.
So what's the most important thing for you about Christmas?
I don't know, just getting together with family and stuff, I think. It's just, like, a good time of the year. Everyone's, like, happy and, well, shopping as well, so.
Are you planning to buy a lot of gifts this year?
Yeah, probably.
All right, thanks.
My name is Lana Newton, and my faculty is something I always forget, the ECPS. I'm in the Measurement Evaluation Research Methodology program for my Master's of Education.
Do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
Does consumerism have a spirit, I would ask, at all? Probably not. That's why it's so shitty. I mean, it sucks. So I would say no, because consumerism has no spirit or soul. Yeah.
Do you think gifts are a really big integral part of Christmas?
No, I hate spending a ton of money on gifts. I mean, my parents give me lots, and then there's some guilt associated with not giving them lots, but I'd rather just hang out.
What do you think is the most important part of Christmas?
Doing something interesting in the winter when it's cold and dark outside and boring. Yeah,
I think. My name is Emily. I'm in pharmacy. I'm in my third year.
Okay. So, I'm asking UBC students, do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
Yeah, I think so, to a degree. I think it can bring out the worst in people in that sense, and it can bring out the best in others if you're giving to good causes like around the world or that sort of thing, but yeah, I agree.
So would you say that like gifts are one of the most integral parts of Christmas?
I think it depends on who you ask, to be honest. To me it's not, but to some people it can be.
So for you, what's the most important part of Christmas?
Well, I'm not from here, so it's nice to go home and see my family. It's really exciting.
Hi, my name is Peter Key. I am in first year, and I am in the Faculty of Arts.
So do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
I do think that there is a greater emphasis on consumerism when it comes to Christmas. Like, there is, like, a greater, like, thinking of, like, oh my gosh, I have to buy all of this stuff for my friends and all that kind of stuff. So definitely there is an aspect of consumerism, but whether, like, the actual spirit of Christmas itself is consumerism, I don't necessarily think they coincide, because mainly the actual aspect of, or the actual, like, meaning behind Christmas is, well, in a secular context, would be all about, like, being with your friends, being with your family, being home together. And like what I've seen with a lot of other friends of mine is the fact that they are so excited to be back home, to be with their family and friends and stuff like that. So I don't think consumerism really, like, I see consumerism more as like a compliment towards that kind of meaning, but I don't think it actually is the meaning of Christmas. So that's kind of what I think.
What's the most important part of Christmas to you then?
The most important part of Christmas, I think just being with my family and appreciating how much we have with each other and all that stuff, because I know there's other people who don't are often like get together with their families often. The fact that we can do that together is something really appreciated. So
Michael Nguyen and Faculty of Arts.
So do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
I'd say so, yeah. I'd agree with that. Consumerism, yeah. Why? Well, thinking of all the commercials I've seen, they like, especially during Christmas, you know, you want to spend something for Christmas, buy a Christmas tree that's like, you know, really cheap at Walmart or Target, right? And I work at a retail store, right? And we already have seasonals up, right? That promote, you know, you need to buy to have a good Christmas. Same thing with right now, Black Friday. You know, the day before that, it's an American Thanksgiving, which people are really thankful for what they have. The day after, people are trampling each other to get what they want. But that's how the world works. It's a consumer society here in North America and other places, right? So, like, it's kind of like, what can we do to, like, try not to do that in a way? So, it's tough.
Do you think charities and, like, humanitarian organizations are, like, dispelling that spirit or making it worse?
I honestly, for me, my opinion, they are making it worse with charity, because the thing about it is that we live in a materialistic world, and with charity, people, there's a difference between need and want, right? But unfortunately with charity, that can get muddled in with all the things, because how I feel with charity is that when you're giving things to people, right, eventually they'll become dependent on it, right? And because of that, because of our consumer society, all they do is consume and consume. Even though it's a good gesture for sure, like a Confucius proverb, you know, give a man a fish, feed him for a day, teach a man a fish, feed him for a lifetime, right? So in ways, charity, it's good, but it's only temporary.
All right, thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome.
I'm Kavonu White, first year Faculty of Arts.
So do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
Honestly, you know, the spirit of Christmas has been corrupted. And you can't really say it's not just specified to Christmas alone, because every holiday, you know, corporate America or corporate any country has taken it as a means to extract money from its population. So think about Thanksgiving, you know, Black Friday falls just after that. You have Christmas, Valentine's Day, everything that is essentially supposed to make us be kind and, you know, generous to each other. They just turn that generosity into consumerism.
Do you think that charities and humanitarian organizations are making this worse or making it better?
I think consumerism is quite detracted from charity or humanitarian organizations, because I have yet to see where somebody buys something to directly give it to a charity organization. I mean, maybe I'm just assuming the worst of humanity, but generally when people ask for donations, you take something that you already have and give it. You don't buy something to give it. So I don't see both of them correlating to a great extent, you know.
Korea, I'm in sciences, and I'm in my technically third year.
So do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
No, because I like the fact that everyone's just happy all the time, and like I think it has to do with the, like, the lights are everywhere, you know, it's just like the decorations and everyone's spirits are high, and like, of course, presents are a plus, but I don't think that's what it's centered around.
Would you say that the media also doesn't try to make it about gifts and try to make it about family, or what do you think the media is most focused on?
Yeah, well, of course, like with there's more Christmas movies on, and so, like, personally, I sit down with my family and we watch the Christmas movies. It's more of a tradition, and like, I don't know. I honestly don't think it's anything about like material gifts or anything. Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much.
Yeah. No worries.
Christine, year two, pharmacy.
Okay. Do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
I think for some people, yeah. Not for me. I just really love baking during Christmas and being with my family, because this is the only time I really get to see them.
Thomas, I'm in sciences, biochemistry, second year.
So do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
Depends where you're from, I guess. Like, what's your cultural background and stuff. For me, I don't know. I just like the atmosphere of it all, like the decorations and stuff. So essentially, no. Not really.
Okay, Brittany Himsterke, Faculty of Science, and second year.
All right. So do you think that the true spirit of Christmas is the spirit of consumerism?
I think that's what comes out a lot, but I think that the true spirit of Christmas should really be about just, like, being with family and friends and kind of thinking about what Christmas really means as opposed to focusing on the gifts.
Christina, I'm in engineering, in third year.
So do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
Yeah. Everybody celebrates it and doesn't really pay attention to... A lot of people don't pay attention to the religious aspect and focuses more on the present giving or just uniting with family, but a lot of consumerism.
So how do you think... Do you think that that needs to be changed?
I don't know if it should be changed, but I know it's something that won't be changed just because of the way the market works and because of people's appeal to this aspect of Christmas as a present giving moment.
My name is Joy, fourth year Faculty of Art.
So do you think that the spirit of Christmas is really the spirit of consumerism?
I think the spirit of Christmas has been very, very much colored by capitalism and consumerism. So what initially was possibly a very religious holiday has become very secular, very, like, consumerish based holiday.
Is that a bad thing?
Not necessarily, but I think when everyone focuses too much on the materialist aspect of things, then yes, it can become a bad thing. If you look at, for example, things like Black Friday, shopping rushes, or, like, you know, Boxing Day sales, things like that, and losing the whole essence of what Christmas is about, and giving and spending time with family, or even if you're religious, you know, going to church, stuff like that, then yes, it does lose the focus of what Christmas is about.
Thanks for tuning in. Happy holidays.
And thank you to Christine for that. That was Hot Topic, which was played partially on Friday. You can also find the full broadcast of that on our Facebook page at News 101. So here with me now, I have Astrik and Garo from the Armenian Student Association. They're president and vice president, respectively. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hi.
So just to start off, can you guys tell me a little bit about where Armenia is in the world?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a very tiny country with about like 3 million people. It's located in the Caucasus, so it's just south of Georgia and just north of Iran and like right between Azerbaijan and Turkey. So kind of in that general region.
Okay. And so you're the Armenian Student Association. How many members do you guys have right now?
We have about 16 to 20 members.
On the roster, yeah.
On the roster, yeah.
Okay. And you know, do you know how big the population is in Vancouver of Armenians?
It's about
3,000.
3,000, yeah, 2,500 okay. to 3,000, maybe give or take a few hundred.
And so what kind of things does the Armenian Student Association do?
Well, we're really big on spreading awareness about Armenian culture, history, maybe some of the politics as well. But in terms of what we really want to do at UBC is we just want to bring together the Armenian community within UBC, so the student base, both undergraduate and graduate. And that's it's not an exclusive club. Like, we also encourage non-Armenian students who... we encourage them to join if they're interested in learning about Armenian history, culture,
yeah. political issues. We do have some pretty active non-Armenian members.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And the nice thing about it is since there's such a small Armenian community here, we get a really diverse group and mm-hmm. kind of mm-hmm. very close-knit as well. So you guys learn a lot about each other in that way. Yeah.
Nice. Now, and are either of you, we talked about this a bit before, but for the audience, are either of you from Armenia, like, directly?
No.
No, I'm born in Vancouver.
And I'm born in Los Angeles.
Okay. Yeah. So how has being a member of this club sort of like, you know, affected your relation to that cultural background?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, before joining the club, well, even before coming to university, I wasn't very much involved with Armenian kind of issues and stuff like that. But once I joined the club, I joined originally as a member. I wasn't an exec member. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just meet like all these like really, really cool people and they all have different perspectives and backgrounds. So you really learn a lot about your own culture and, you know, you learn about what's going on in the region. You know, you learn more about the country, like what issues the country has, you know, what's going good in the country, what they need to change, that kind of stuff. So it really, really expands your perspective. And that's what I've taken away from it mostly.
Yeah, similarly. I mean, I grew up in Los Angeles where there's like an enormous Armenian population is like 200,000. Don't quote me on that, but something like that. So like I kind of came from a pretty Armenian heavy, I guess, upbringing. So coming here, like, I immediately sought it out, I guess. And like I was like a member originally, and I really liked the dynamics of the group, I guess. So, and here we are now.
Yeah.
Nice. Can you give us some basic background or history about Armenia?
Yeah, sure. So it's been around for a really long time in various manifestations. It was part of the Ottoman Empire for a while, and then after the fall of that, it was part of the Soviet Union, and then the fall of the Soviet Union became its own republic. So it's kind of starting out, I guess, as its own country.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of history and a lot of.
Interestingly, it was the first country in the world to adopt Christianity.
As really?
Its official religion.
In 301, like 301.
Wow.
AD.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the date, but I know that fact.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of famous Armenians.
Yeah. Charles Aznavour.
Yeah, Charles Aznavour. Every Armenian will take pride in telling you Cher, for example, is half Armenian.
Kirkorian.
Kirkorian, yeah, he owns a few casinos in Las Vegas and the doctor.
Oh, Dr. Gevorkian?
Yeah. one of the advocates for euthanasia.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. A pretty contentious topic, but he's one of the big players in that discussion.
Little known fact, Principal Skinner in The Simpsons is also
Armenian. Oh, yeah.
The actual character or the actor?
The character.
The character, yeah. Really? The show, they reveal him to actually be Armenian. What was his name? Armin
Tamzarian?
Tamzarian, yeah.
Oh, right. Yes, where he turns out he has this whole military background.
Yeah.
Okay. So what kind of cultural events and social activities do you guys get involved with?
Well, most of our events they're purely social, mostly. Some of them do have more cultural emphasis, mm-hmm. maybe more historical or political emphasis, but mostly what we try to do with our events is have a fun experience for all the members, try and encourage as many of them to come out, and non-members as well. So some of the events we've hosted this term so far were, we had a dinner, an Independence Day dinner to celebrate our independence from the Soviet Union, mm-hmm. but it was more of a forum to welcome new and returning members to the start of this year. We also had a games night,
yeah,
which went really, really well. We had a pretty good turnout for that. And then we had the
ice skating
event, yeah, which was our kind of our end of term event.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, do you guys ever join with other cultural groups on campus?
Yeah, actually, I guess definitely. The one of the events I forgot to mention was we did Eurofest, yeah. which is where us and other European clubs, we got together and we share food. So kind of typical ethnic dishes. Some of the stuff we brought was, we had a dish called lahmacun, which is Armenian pizza.
Okay.
It's really, really good. It's really, really thin. It's topped with meats and a few spices, and you can fill it with, you know, lettuce or whatever you want. But, you know, you just roll it up, and it's really good and really tasty, and you just eat it. We brought some pomegranates.
Yeah, well. Mostly for decorative purposes.
They're mostly for decoration, but... yeah. But yeah, that was really cool, too, because it's like, you know, everybody comes together. We had the German club there, the Russian club was there, so Scandinavian club was there as well. So it was really cool just to kind of see, you know,
yeah.
all nice. That stuff. Yeah,
that's awesome. Is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about regarding your club and, you know, the activities you guys do? Anything you want to, you know, throw out to the CITR listening audience?
Well, I mean, I guess... we always love seeing new faces, and like we said, it's open to everyone, mm-hmm. With even the slightest interest.
Yeah. So, I mean, if anybody listening out there is interested, we encourage you to come out, you know, see what we do. If you like it, you're more than welcome to join. Yeah.
We've got a movie night coming up next term.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, so...
And it's a comedy. And Armenian comedies are pretty funny. And it will have
subtitles. What is an Armenian comedy, like...
What makes
it different from
this one's more cultural, but like, I guess it's the fact that it parodies certain aspects of Armenian culture.
Yeah, I mean, it's just they're usually what I like about them is that they're really, really well done. There's really good quality to them, which makes them more fun to watch, and it's just kind of, you know, funny commentaries. And surprisingly, you learn a lot from watching these movies, even though they're.
Is it like primarily like cultural jokes and that kind of thing, or
yeah, mostly
they can be, but it's also pretty accessible, I think.
Yeah,
as well.
I mean, you don't have to be an Armenian to enjoy the movie. Let's put it that way.
Yeah,
it's pretty good humor. So
yeah.
Now you guys had some files that you had brought along.
Yeah. So our treasurer is in the opera program. She has an incredible voice, and so we brought some of her recordings of some Armenian songs.
Okay, so we're going to play those in just a sec. We're going to take a quick PSA break while we get that set up, and then we will bring that to the airwaves.
Cool.
The UBC Ski and Snowboard Club is a nonprofit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.
Come on one of our legendary trips and explore the glory of riding in British Columbia. Or join us at the bar to discover the true meaning of debauchery. Ask your roommate, ask your parents, ask the RCMP. Who has the most fun at UBC? You'll get the same answer. The Ski and Snowboard Club.
Duh. Joining the Ski and Board Club is easy. Come by our office, sub 115, anytime with some money to become a member. Your membership gives you access to all the deals offered by our sponsors, cheap beverages at our parties, an invitation to all club events, and of course, only members can come on the trips.
You're wasting me precious carbon dioxide!
I'm pumping it into the atmosphere, boy! Thanks to global warming, the temperature will soon go through the roof, and then we'll have an endless summer.
Why do you want an endless summer, Mr. Krabs?
So I can open me latest money-making venture, the Krusty Pool!
The endless summer does sound fun.
And profitable.
Fun and profitable! Big business does it again!
Unfortunately, for those of us who aren't talking sponges, climate change isn't quite as fun.
Luckily, there are many easy ways for students to conserve energy.
If chargers for cell phones, cameras, and laptops are left plugged in, they continue to draw electricity even when not connected to the device.
Hi, my name is
This
Duncan
phantom
Q.
load can be avoided by unplugging electronics and chargers after
LFS.
Use. A more convenient option is to hook electronics up to a power bar, which can be switched off after use.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
And welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM's 24 Hours of Student Power. I'm Morgan Yee, and I'm here with the President and Vice President of the Armenian Student Association. We have a file coming up next that we're going to play. Can you guys give me a quick introduction for what this is?
Yeah, definitely. So, again, our treasure is an opera program, and she's got some recordings of Armenian music. So the first one is called Gurung, which is a type of bird. But, yeah,
okay.
Enjoy.
Hi, my name is Duncan McHugh. I'm one of the...
Sorry, one sec. That is clearly the wrong file. There we go. All right, and we have one more piece. If you guys want to give a quick intro to that.
Sure, this one's called Anduni. I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. We're back. So we're just going to take, you know, the last 8 or 9 minutes that we have with the ASA to discuss more about the cultural aspect of the club and the other kind of things they do and ways that if you're interested and you're listening that you can get involved.
Sure. So like we said before, everyone's welcome. So most of our events are just a good time.
Well, one thing that we always laugh about is the event that I spoke about earlier, the games night.
Mm-hmm.
We food was provided, drinks and refreshments and everything were provided. So Astrid and I went to the Save on Foods. That's just by
Westbrook.
Yeah, we went there and we were like, okay, so we have about 14, 15 people confirmed. So, you know, we should try and get this food. And the one thing about Armenians, which is really funny, and all Armenian events, is that there's always too much food. And we always laugh about it, but we also fell into that trap, too. Yeah. So we bought, like, a bunch of tea, chips, cookies.
Yeah, we bought 100 bags of Earl Grey, too.
Yeah, we brought... Oh, the big fruit. the fruit thing fruit with platter. Like fruit platter with like dipping sauces and everything.
Two like family sized chip pies.
Basically, yeah, like enough to feed like a town, basically. So then we show up at the event, we lay everything out. We had like juice and everything, and I mean, I think the only thing that was actually finished was one of the box of cookies and maybe a few of the drinks. Everything else was left over.
So I still have about 96 tea bags in my room.
So if you come to our events, you will be well fed. Yeah. Let's just put it that way. And I guess, you know, another really cool thing about the club is that we have a lot of members from diverse backgrounds. Most of our members are Armenian, but they come from all different sorts of regions and areas around the world. We have Russian Armenians, Turkish Armenians, which I am myself. We have Persian Armenians, Lebanese Armenians. So, I mean, really, really diverse backgrounds from all these people that we have involved. And it's just really cool to learn about, you know, how, you know, their family works or what their family does, their traditions, because it really does vary between groups.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even though it seems like it'd be a really homogenous group, because like the Armenian Association is really incredibly diverse.
Yeah.
Since like so many Armenians don't actually live in the country of Armenia.
Yeah.
Right. So now, how many are, you know, how many Armenians actually live outside of Armenia?
So the diaspora is up to about 4 million.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who don't live in Armenia.
And how many are there in Armenia?
About three.
Okay. So more outside than inside.
Just about. Yeah.
And the biggest collection of diaspora is in Los Angeles.
Probably.
Glendale represent. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's really nice to get to see so much diversity, even with such a small group. Really learn a lot about identity and flexibility.
Because, I mean, you don't really realize just how much difference there is between different Armenians, like, from based on where they're from.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, they're a great group of kids that we have, too, so it's nice.
So even, like, between yourselves, you know, you grew up in Vancouver and you grew up in L.A., do you find that there's differences between the way that, you know, your Armenian culture has played out?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, like, Los Angeles has a very different Armenian community than Vancouver does.
Mm-hmm.
Since there's, you know, so many in Los Angeles, it's just a very different dynamic. Whereas here, it's very, very close-knit. It's just such a small community that everyone does kind of know each other.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, back home, it's like you see someone who's Armenian, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, but, you know, especially in certain cities, like, you kind of expect it almost. So it's very different.
Like compared to how many Armenians there are in L.A., compared to how many there are here, like, for me, it was... It was like a complete shock almost, because I mean, I grew up here my whole life, and you know, we have Armenian family members here and friends, and we have gatherings and things, but I went to LA last summer and we drove through Glendale, which is the community where most Armenians live in Los Angeles, and it was just like complete like culture shock to me. Like there were signs everywhere written in Armenian. I mean, people were speaking Armenian. I mean, just looking at people, you can tell they were Armenian. Like I've never seen that many Armenians in one area before. So that really kind of just tells you the difference between an area here, which has a fairly limited Armenian community, and an area like that, which has this massive Armenian community. And
yeah, it's kind of culture shock for me too. And I came here, like I can't buy all these things that I'm so used to having back home.
You're more removed from the culture, I would say, here than you are somewhere there where there's more people. But still, I mean, it's a very close community that we have in Vancouver as well. And Astrid has gotten a chance to become a part of it as well by living here. And it's just... You know, everybody just cares about each other and takes care of each other, and it's nice.
Now, is there a specific area in Vancouver where Armenians tend to congregate? Like, do you guys have a community center?
We have one community center. We have St. Gregory, which is a church and community center, and then we have St. Vartan, which is another church. It's not so much a community center as opposed to Gregory, but there's two churches there. One of them is located in Richmond, and the other one is in Vancouver. Whereabouts, like 44th? The address escapes me now, but one's in Vancouver, one's in Richmond, and most, I mean, I have some very close friends who live in West Vancouver, and a few in North Vancouver who are Armenian. We have a lot of people who come from Burnaby as well, Richmond, a few from Surrey, so we're kind of everywhere in Vancouver. Definitely not in one big kind of group or one concentration area like in Glendale in Los Angeles, but I mean, like I said, the community here is, like, it's so diverse, just as the members of our club are.
Yeah.
But it's a really great community. I'm really happy and privileged to be part of it, I'm sure.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah, I feel the same.
Do you guys ever, do events with the greater Armenian community? Or do you primarily focus on UBC students?
We primarily focus on UBC students, because this is a university club. We obviously, we encourage, younger kids from... you know, in that are in high school and elementary school to come out and come to our events. So there's definitely that, like, we do encourage other people to come, but it's mostly just a social club where Armenians and non-Armenians can come together and just have fun, enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, it gives us a certain degree of autonomy, just kind of being your own student group at UBC.
I mean, most, like, parents don't show up.
Right.
If that kind of helps put it, you know?
In perspective.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we're just wrapping up here, but thank you guys very much for coming in.
Yeah,
good
so
luck
for
with
us.
your next semester of events.
Thank you.
And so that was the president and vice president of the Armenian Students Association, Astrik and Gero. Up next, we have, let's just check the schedule.